Good afternoon, everybody. It's great to see you all again. I've been meaning to do something like this for a long time. And I think it's very, very appropriate to our little group because it emphasizes something that I've wanted to communicate for a while. Before we start, I'm going to type a quote, and this comes from the Daily Send on the Telegram channel, and send it to everyone for you to read. Okay, does everybody see that? Okay, I'll read it out loud. Whether we receive praise or criticism is of no account. The only important thing is that we have a pure motivation and let the law of cause and effect, or karma, be our witness, by the Dalai Lama. This quote in particular, I wanted to start the class off with today because this really describes our life and our choices. It describes everybody's life and their choices. We all want to live a good life. We all want to have happiness. We all want to do what we think is right. And most of us, for most of our lives, end up or continue to constantly question, was that the right decision? Was that the best decision? Or should I have done that? Should I have done it differently? Or that person, why did they do what they're doing? And how can I be that? Or what can I get for myself? Perhaps we've been very self-centered at a certain point and suddenly we realize, wow, I'm being very self-absorbed and centered and I don't want to be that way. But actually, the law of cause and effect is, just as we've been talking over the last several weeks, of origin arising on a dependence, meaning that everything that comes from something goes back to something and is a result of that. So ultimately, everything we do is going to fit into the way karma works. Karma is a natural law. It's not a justice law. It's not a moral law. It's not a good or bad. I hope you guys all realize that now. It's a strictly cause and effect. You have soil, it's moist. You have sunshine and heat, and you have some kind of seed in the soil. It germinates. And then when the seed grows, a plant grows. And then afterwards, the plant does what it does, whether it has fruit or whether it bears flowers or whether it provides shade. And then eventually, when the plant reaches the end of its life, it decays. So, of course, if there's too much water, the roots rot. If there's too much sun, not enough water, then the plant becomes too dry. So everything around us follows this law of cause and effect in nature, in the universe. Nature is really the universe. Therefore, there's not much to really worry about. Does that make sense? Now, I'm not speaking about fate or destiny. I'm not saying that's not something or not having goals. What I'm saying is there's not much to worry about because ultimately what we create and what origins or what situations we establish will give rise to what we are. And when we realize we're in a certain situation, all we have to do is look back at the situation that we created for the origin of that situation. And then in looking back at that situation, we realize what we can change or not change. Does that make sense to everybody? It's not a guilt trip. It's not a, I did this, or I'm good, or I'm bad, or that person is right or wrong. Whatever a person does, how evil and cruel, or how wonderful and compassionate, it's all within arising and dependency on the origin. You feed the origin, more of that situation will arise. You cease that origin, then that result will diminish. And so as we begin our lives, and why I wanted to say this at the beginning of our class today, was that each one of us in our little sangha here is on our own path. And we're on the path trying to find truth. Now, truth depends on knowing ourselves and knowing reality. Once we know ourselves, we know reality, we start to know how to look at what's going on, and we start to understand what truth is. And truth, the absolute, is truth for everybody, but not the same truth. Just like beauty. One walks through a museum, maybe the Museum of Modern Art, or the Met, or the Louvre, or something like that, or Uffizi, and we walk through as a group, and we're eight of us here, or seven of us, sometimes eight of us, and one, oh, that's beautiful, that's amazing, it makes my heart move. And the others look at them and say, oh boy, you got weird taste. Then we walk to the next painting. It's, oh, that's amazing. That's beautiful. And everybody, oh, you got weird taste too. Boy, that two of us down. And by the time we get to the end of the museum, we all find that we have different taste. And so what's happening is that we all are experiencing beauty, the absolute, but we're each experiencing it in our own way. So in the same way, what happens is we experience truth. We all experience truth. And this is why my teacher used to say, and I also agree with the saying, where truth is, self is not. And where self is, truth is not. So truth is true here. It's in Geneva. It's true in the mountains of Switzerland for Johnny. It's true in London for Senem. It's true in New York for Sam. It's true in LA for Quinn. It's true in London for Tiziana. It's true for Kat, for Masha. But the absolute truth is experienced by each and every one of us differently, because we're unique emanations as a result of karma. Does that make sense to everybody? Each of our origins is different. Personality and your gender are strictly a result of karma. That's it. Because once you realize that, you realize that there's an origin. And from that origin, something comes out. Now, as a human being, we're born with one or the other, or maybe a combination of genders that we're all accepting now in our societies. And out of that, we start to develop a personality, right? Our parents, our education, our cultures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's all it is. But yes, that's everything. And so understanding that is to be able to not cling to things. And not clinging is very, very important. And so looking back at the statement, whether we receive praise or criticism is of no account. The only important thing is that we have a pure motivation and let the law of cause and effect be our witness. So what's being said here, my interpretation, of course, is that when we do something, our intention, motivation, is the key element. What results from our action is going to be determined by karma, because our origin will create a result, will give rise to a situation, give rise to a condition. So if our origin is clear, understanding, compassionate, loving, caring, sympathetic, then naturally it's going to give rise to something more like that, vis-a-vis our origin being angry, frustrated, hateful, or whatever. Clear? And we can't worry too much about, okay, how are people going to think about me? What's my image going to be? What's the result going to be? Because that's going to happen based on our origin. Once we've let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, once we've started the movement, the energetic movement, the result is already going to be cause and effect. Not fate, but based on the origin conditions. Clear? Questions? How many of you were able to catch Paul Fleischman's lecture? Everybody? Did you like it?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrific. Mm-hmm. And then having started to read his book, even made it better. Mm-hmm. Getting to know a little bit about him.
But right.
It was really very, very good.
Fantastic. Anybody else want to comment on their opinion?
I just thought it was some... But in lots of points, it was a recap of what we've been discussing with you anyway. So it was good to, it was nice. But a lot of things just sounded familiar to me.
Yeah, I liked how he discussed the scientific community. Mm-hmm. And how bringing in meditation and the reactions, and I really got a lot out of that. I really enjoyed it.
Fantastic.
And I too, with the basis that I have just the short time I've been with you, I was able to follow it without being completely lost. Great. You know, obviously, the brainiac part of it's way, way up there, but I could follow. So thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful.
It was interesting because it was similar and yet it was different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Well, you know me more, Sam, so you know more of the subtle details where I present it.
Exactly. So that's why I was just like, I was riveted. I couldn't take my eyes off of them.
Yeah, I have greatest respect for him. In my opinion, he's one of the greatest expositors of Dharma today. So I really was happy that he spoke. And I do have some different thoughts about some things with him, and that's okay. That's okay. And that's one reason I wanted you to watch it as well. And I'm very happy, Sam, you picked that up, because it shows that you're paying attention to the detail of the subtleties of what's slightly different. It doesn't make me right, doesn't make him right. It just means it's a different experience. Act two, dependent origination. The origin will depend on the result. And so his origin is very different from my origin. And so the conditions are very different. But other comments? No?
No, it's true. For sure, I would not be able to follow him at all had I not been in the Sunday discourse with you, most definitely.
Yeah. And did you find that you received good information from him, stuff that's useful for your understanding about your own practice, your own life, or how to approach things?
Well, one of the things that he said, that the meditation of what's the word he used? I think when there's an energy of a group meditation.
Bhanga.
Bhanga. And I get that. Meditation, doing by yourself in a group, completely different. Mm-hmm. Like Kat and I used to belong to a woman meditation every week. So powerful. And that I didn't know the word, but I understand when he meant the word Bhanga, because mm-hmm. I felt that and I understood that.
Good. Okay. But he wrote a really good article about, with the title, Buddhism is Not Pacifism. And I'll try and find it and send it to the group on Telegram to read. It's a fascinating article. Okay, anything else on that before we move to today's
discourse? So I enjoyed when he mentioned, when he talked about the DNA and Dharma and how these two things, how they relate to each other and how we can look at them from the point of view that it's all information and reality. And, you know, what is DNA? It's a certain information and certain, they relate to the laws of the universe, right? And that Dharma is an ideal way of living, which is being real, and how these two concepts, how they, how we can look at them together.
Right.
Which is where I guess science and Buddha Dharma merge in his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Before, Sam, I know you wanted to say something. Do you want to say it? Go ahead. No, I'll go on.
Yeah, I just, you know, you talk about your teacher a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about his teacher a lot. I speak about my teacher a lot. And how do we make sure that we don't cling, that we don't get...
Not clinging is the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
My response to that question, and I'd like to pre-say what my teacher used to always say to me, is my teacher would say something that I would feel is very right. And I used to go, oh yeah, absolutely. And he'd look at me and frown and say, what do you mean absolutely? I said, well, yeah, that's correct. Oh, but what do you mean absolutely? There's no such thing as absolutely. If you accept anicca and impermanence, how can you say absolutely? So I got into the habit of saying, the current state of my thinking is not, or the conclusion I have arrived at the moment, but no absolutely, or this is the way it is, and changing the way we speak. That's also part of right speech, that we don't make absolutes. So the current state of my thinking about what you said, Sam, is actually very much the topic of the lecture that we're going to have today. I believe that the Buddha and also the Taoist, when understood correctly, were the early scientists of the human race, even before the Greeks, and in a way deeper than the Greeks. and that's a little bit of a prejudice perhaps, because their methodology was truly to observe what's around them, define it as best they can in a vocabulary that worked for them, then come to certain perceptions about it, and then as a result of that, react and respond. When they responded to that situation, there was another result, right? Another origin, another result. Based on observing the next result, they would perceive and come to conclusion what that result was, and then respond to that. Now, that is the scientific method, isn't it? We observe everything in nature. For example, we take water and we observe its qualities, its characteristics, and then we come to some conclusions about it. For example, that we need to keep it in a vessel, because if we don't contain water, it will just go all over the place, right? So, and then we understand that water is a liquid. There's a liquid form. But then when we heat the water, it becomes a steam. So it's no longer need to be contained. But if we want to keep the energy of the water, we have to contain the steam, right? Or if we cool the water, we have ice. And then we need to contain the ice in something that doesn't let the ice melt, otherwise the ice will melt and become liquid again. So it's observing what is around us, not only around us, well, we'll get to that in a moment, around us, seeing how it interacts, responding to that observation with some kind of action, and then seeing how, that's a constant chain, right? That's the chain. The difference between the Taoist and the Buddhist practice vis-a-vis modern day science, which we're going to get into today, is that they also apply this to our mind and to our feelings and to our perceptions. That it's not just the physical world that acts this way, but it's the internal world, the energetic world as well. And that is why in our lecture today, you'll hear me refer to quantum physics and quantum mechanics and quantum field theory. If you've read the material, you'll have seen that. And please open that as a PDF on your desktop, because we're going to go through it meticulously. Because quantum science as a basket for quantum mechanics, quantum physics, quantum field theory is now being able to realize, to see, to test, and get results that actually what Taoist and Buddhist philosophy said was accurate. And that this physical, non-physical separation that for our culture mostly became very emphasized with Aristotle is not really a true difference. It's just all on the same circular spectrum. Do you understand what I mean by that? Like the yin-yang. And we'll go to that in a moment. Okay? So my teacher used to say that the Buddha was the world's first scientist. And at the beginning, of course, I never understood what he meant. And now I completely and agree with him what he meant. Because it was this aspect of observation that was emphasized in Buddha Dharma that had not been emphasized anywhere else as much. Because most other places, as far as they were concerned, there were gods, there were spirits, there were whatever things that provided reality. And that's all you needed to know. And from there, you need to just please the gods or please the spirits. But the Buddha basically said, no, there's none of that. You need to observe, experience, and respond to reality. Now, the answer to your question that I'm providing with this long prologue, Sam, is that it's through the observation of reality, the true observation of reality, that we get to know ourselves. It's through getting to know ourselves and observing how we function that we get to understand the external function as well. And it's through the observation of the relationship between everything, and by that I mean material and non-material or substantial and insubstantial, that we start to understand the way everything works, and then we start to realize why clinging is not a healthy thing. It's not a real thing. It's grasping an illusion. And slowly we let go of clinging. Without that realization, I'm currently of the thinking that true release from clinging is really very, very, very difficult. And the Buddha in many suttas is said to have said that even clinging to the idea of wanting to accomplish Nibbana is a clinging. If we cling to the idea of wanting Nibbana, then we're never going to get to Nibbana or enlightenment, if we'd like to use that word. Or happiness. If we cling to the fact that we want happiness, happiness will always elude us. If we accept that there are times, accept that we just follow with what we're dealing with right now and be real, we'll experience happiness, sadness, pain, pleasure, but we'll always be in some mode of reality, which will provide a certain contentment. and will release the production of dukkha because we're allowing life to happen. But we're not just releasing any participation, we're allowing it to happen. And that's why surfing is such a great metaphor. We're riding the wave as the wave forms, as the wave moves forward, and as the wave crashes, and then we go back out and we ride again. So surfing is a very Zen practice, provided one doesn't get caught up in all the other stuff around it that's clinging to it. But if I'm looking for the perfect wave to ride, for the perfect ride, I'm clinging again.